Hello all monsters and welcome to Caffeinated Monsters, your bi-weekly comedy horror podcast. I'm your host Faith as always, and today we've got Keith with us.
Hello again Faith, great to be here as always.
Always good to have a chat with you.
Yes, you too.
But yeah, today, as one of the movies we mentioned in the films we're looking forward to this year, we thought we'd sit down and talk about Megan.
Yeah, fantastic. So obviously I've seen it myself this week, much like yourself, or the weekend. And yeah, I fully enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it, actually, more than I thought I would do. I felt it was way better than it deserved to be for a PG-13.
Yeah, I was quite surprised as well. Usually I'll if I sit down, I'm like, it's a 15, it's not going to be that gory, there's not going to be like that much involved. But they were very creative with what Megan could do, and it was kind of like, yeah. Oh, I like this now. I like the creativity.
Yeah, they didn't show, obviously, really too much gruesomeness, too much gore as such. But yeah, they did it well. And apparently, I've read somewhere that there was actually a more, a higher rated version. I don't know if it's a 15 or an 18 that's in existence. And they may still release that too. So hopefully it'd be interesting to see how the two compare to each other. But yeah, you know, I thought it was really well done for PG-13. And it wasn't just because of that. You know, you get worried and you think, this isn't going to be my horror. And it isn't. It still isn't. It's definitely a great, great gateway horror film for young people getting into the genre. But it works. And I don't know, it's stylish. It's fun. You know, there was so many times I laughed during the film. Yeah, I just had a really good time with it.
Felt the same way. After seeing so many memes and things, and like Megan and Chucky bashing it out on Twitter, I was like, I'm tempted by this because it actually looks interesting.
That's right. It's very different from Chucky, isn't it? It's not got any sort of similarity except that it's a killer doll. Even the fact, well, obviously the new reboot of Chucky was also an AI doll, but. Yeah, the original 80s supernatural haunted by a serial killer Chucky is a fair bit different to this doll herself.
Sort of, I went to a cinema with a couple of mates, and they said, "Well, that it was kind of like imagine if it was Chucky's older sister," and it was kind of like, that makes a lot of sense. Like if Chucky's older sister was like an AI bot.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting take on it. It was very, very cleverly done. I liked it. The whole film was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, it starts with the death of the two parents from Katie's parents, the main character, Mingail, which, you know, it basically the whole narrative of the film and therefore after is like, it's an underlying story of how Gemma, who's her auntie, obviously played by Alison Williams, who was also fantastic in Get Out. She plays the girlfriend in that film too. It's all an underlying story about how she learned to look after a child when it's something that's just completely alien to her, isn't it? And that's, you know, how the film plays out with its main story.
It was a nice take. It was nice to actually, you know, when there's so many films where they'll go, oh yeah, this person's parents died, but you don't actually know that much of a backstory. It's like, you don't actually see it happen. You just kind of get a bit of hearsay.
Yeah, agreed. They showed that off quite quickly, and I was a bit surprised because I didn't. Again, with Megan, I know I always say this, and it doesn't always happen, but I tend to try and avoid most trailers. And with Megan, I hadn't seen anything, so I had no thoughts on what was going to happen. So I didn't know it was about trauma. I didn't know the girl's parents died, and then she got stuck with her auntie, and any of that was just completely new to me. So I was a bit of a surprise to see that happen. You know, straight off and in the opening scene. Obviously, when she's playing, she's obviously playing at the time with the sort of animal toy that her auntie actually made for her, or designed for the, in no way related to Funko Pop, funky company that her auntie works for.
God, yeah. I mean, it looked like a cross between, it's like if a Furby had the app capability.
Yeah, that was it, wasn't it? It was definitely a joke on Furbies. And the annoyance of Furbies. So yeah,
I still remember Furbies just laughing at random, and it's like, oh, I'm gonna take the batteries out now.
Yes, my sisters had Furbies when I was growing up.
What about that was fun for you? Oh god, like never ending conversation. If you stuck two of them together, they're talking till the battery died.
Yeah, we stuck them in the bin. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Yeah, Alison Williams, I thought she was great in it as well. She plays sort of a, I guess, almost like a mad scientist role where she's trying to make this, you know, super intelligent AI doll that's going to, you know, it's going to basically not just, you know, there's a narrative in the story that you don't play too heavily with, which I thought was good. It doesn't take a serious narrative, but there's that whole narrative about how parenting, modern parenting, can involve sticking your kid in front of technology to do the parenting for you, you know? I mean, God knows, during the pandemic, when we were all working from home, I had two children, me and my wife had to work, you know, technology did a lot of lifting during the day, unfortunately, in order for to go ahead and be up to work in that period. But so I think that was a bit of a play on, you know, iPad generation, consoles, etc. And that's what it feels like that the character of Gemma is trying to do. Is actually designed not just a doll who's going to be a best friend for, you know, whichever child it's bought for, but it's also a doll that's basically going to just do all the parenting duties for it, so they don't have to, they can get on with a career. And it gives that sort of, you know, sad sort of story about that she's not really attached to the kid. She doesn't want to be, almost doesn't want to be, you know, her godparent, and is trying to get this doll to look after it instead of her doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like when people want to, they'll take on the responsibility of having a child, but they don't really have the means to look after it, so they're like, they'll pawn it off on someone else.
Yeah, you get that, I guess, with richer parents having au pairs and nannies and stuff, so I guess that's also part of the sort of social commentary of this film. But as I say, why that's prevalent and why it's there as an underlying storyline, or an underlying bit of social commentary, it's not really played on too heavily. It, you know, it doesn't take it into a dark place. It just more or less, you know, it's a very lighthearted film. It doesn't take itself serious as a film. So yeah, even though that narrative's there, it doesn't weigh too heavily on the actual film itself.
Like there were a couple of moments that did make me laugh, but I don't think they were meant to be funny. But it was just my brain just doing its own thing.
I realised how much I was enjoying this film, and now it's going to sound terrible saying it over out loud, actually. But I was watching the death scene of the bully at the school open day, where he pulls his ear off and then he runs in front of the car and gets, you're not like, I've never really sat and watched a film where the death of a child that actually made me laugh out loud, but it really did, because it was very done humorously, you know. And straight away in this film, all the characters, when you meet them, who die, you know they're going to die at some point. Any horror fan worth the salt understands that straight away. The dog and the next door neighbour are getting it. You know that bully's going to get it, and he gets it in a very funny manner. You know the boss and his assistant are definitely getting it. You know it does that whole play on. It makes, you know, arsehole characters there so that you enjoy them getting their comeuppance, right? And that's on display throughout the film, and I found it really, really good and really funny for it. I mean, yeah. You don't often get to see a child die in a horror film and then laugh at the fact that he's dead, you know. It made me properly chuckle.
I felt the same as well. It was just, I mean, I thought it was going to go, and if it was an 18, I thought it was going to go into a very dark place. If it was like an older rating, like when it came to like the kid with like the annoying growth spurt that says "fuck off, Holly." That made me laugh slightly, like, way too hard in cinema.
No, that's it. The whole film, it's just, it's a comedy horror almost, isn't it? I wasn't expecting that. It's a comedy horror. There was plenty of laughs in it, plenty of funny things. The doll, the character of the doll is great, you know. She's just such a good character. She's a good slasher monster, isn't she? So yeah, it really worked. It's all very, I found it very stylish as well. I just enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really liked the fact that she could like record people's voices, and so it was almost like a ventriloquist dummy sort of moment.
She's pretending to be with people on the phone and stuff to get her own way. It's good.
I liked it when people were like, she's only 4 feet tall, how is she, like, she can't do that much damage. And it's kind of like, mate, she's made out of titanium.
Exactly.
Can hack into things.
You guys made her, and you don't know how dangerous she can be. You know the strength she's got. She's got like some titanium AC exoskeleton. I think she's going to be pretty tough.
Saying that, the bit where the bully actually picks her off the ground and runs with it, my mate looked at me and just went, how is he able to lift her? She's made out of fucking titanium. Like lifting, like she's absolutely made of nothing, but she's like made out of titanium. Unless she could somehow suppress her own weight somehow, I don't know how that worked.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. That why you guys, and they only could smash it down really easy, because obviously later in the film, when we have the sort of final battle as such, the girl has to use Bruce, doesn't she? The other big robot to pick her up and bash her about. So yeah, that is a really good point. That sort of maybe a little plot hole there, or you know, maybe someone can explain that. Titan is much easier to pick up than I figured it would be.
Yeah, that bit kind of I can understand a little bit leniency, but yeah, when my mate said that, I was like, how is that kid picking her up actually?
Yeah, I guess you just gotta suspend disbelief in horror sometimes. It's like, you know, when things don't go with the rules as they should do, like in It Follows, the whole idea that entity just stalks you and walks after you and just follows you behind you all the way until it gets to you and obviously then kills you. It's sort of ruined in that film, and I didn't spot it. And when I watched the film itself, I loved the film at the cinema, but I went with my wife and she said as soon as she came out, if that thing is just walking after you, what was it doing on the roof of the house when they drove away? It was like, it's a really good point. It isn't following its own rules. So, but you know, there can be the odd sort of maybe what you'd maybe call a faux pas in a movie that you just have to drop and move on. You know, I mean, it's about a slasher AI killer doll. So, I mean, can't pick on everything, can you?
It's like, if you nitpick on things, you literally like unthread so many films.
Yeah, especially in horror. God, you know that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the bit where after he like picks her up and like throws her on the floor, it's a bit, it was when he like took one of her shoes off and I was like, why is he doing that? And then he like leaned on that sort of like straddled her and I was like, oh.
It's not going to get too dark. Yeah.
I was thinking like, oh God, is this, oh God, what's he going to do to her? And what's she going to do to him as a repercussionist? So I'm like, thank God this isn't 18 and he isn't older, because otherwise it would really get weird.
Yeah, but no, you just...
But yeah, that kind of like made me sort of like cringe a little bit in the cinema, because I was thinking like, oh God, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? And I was like, oh, it's fine. It's an 18. She's ripping his ear off. It's fine.
I had the same thought as well, actually. Yeah, starting to address, I thought they're not going, they can't be going there with it being a PG-13. Absolutely not. But yeah, he was just a spoiled little child. He was unhappy that he couldn't get the attention from the doll itself, and yeah, Tim learned his mistake on that. Yeah, I liked, again, it did follow all, you know, the horror tropes really well. There was a scene when you first meet the next door neighbour, I've forgotten her name now, the one with the dog, anyway. And the first thing you see is, like, obviously the dog. You know, that's going to become some sort of, it's foreshadowing what's going to happen in the future. And then you see the woman's, like, keep your chemicals over that side. And as soon as she said that, I was like, yeah, this woman's getting killed with her own chemicals later, isn't it? And it was just so obvious, but it did work really well. It was a really, really funny death as well. It was really well done. But she, like, shoots in the hand, and, you know, with the nail gun to tie her down and just start spraying her with her own deadly chemicals. And very, very funny and very stylishly done.
But yeah, I mean, it did make me laugh how the how some of the fight scenes happened. I liked how they incorporated like the previous scene from like earlier in the film, which shows Katie showing Megan how to dance.
Yes, I love that. That was actually my highlight of the film for me. That was my favourite bit, was the death of Gemma's boss and his assistant also. That whole scene was just great. I thought it was really well done. It was really funny. So yeah, I mean, there's no need for the dance or the cartwheels, all those stylish things she does as she goes towards the character. I can't remember his actual name now. But yeah, when she goes to kill him with the, what do you call it, the guillotine, isn't it? That she gets off, the paper guillotine, and she gets off to use as a sword. And it's just so stylishly done and funny. And when he, you know, then when she gets the assistant next and explains how he's going to get framed for it because he was downloading company secrets, and it was just, yeah, it was so clever. It just probably made me chuckle again. And yeah, I was just at the grid of my voice enjoying it because of like how well those sort of scenes played out. And that was probably my favorite one in the whole film, actually.
Yeah, I loved how she was able to like manipulate the situation so it actually went like, oh, could you live with yourself for doing this to your boss? And it was just like, yeah, yes, I can. And she just pushes the blade in.
Makes him hold it so it looks like he's killed himself, he's committed suicide. And yeah, and escaped out the door.
Yeah, the reveal to the general public as well was just brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, obviously she gets the way she reveals herself at the piano when she gets back to the house is really cool as well. reveals herself to Gemma and starts playing the piano, and you know, then starts to talk about how, you know, what happened to their relationship, because she remembers, as an AI, she remembers all the talking that Gemma did when she was waking up until 4 a.m, didn't she? She remembers talking about different things of her and said, I thought we were friends, which was a great way to like sort of give her some sort of emotional, you know, like a real emotional moment for her, even though she is AI and shouldn't have any emotions at all.
I love the when someone asks like, what the hell are you, and Megan just says, I've been wondering that myself, and it's like, oh
yeah,
she's contemplating things.
She's showing traits of being human rather than AI, right? She's, you know, contemplating her own existence.
Like, she's becoming self-aware. Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, very clever. I like the, obviously we talked earlier about the whole underlying narrative about, you know, the use of technology to sort of outsource parenting, I guess. And I like the way they did that with, like, that another thing revolves around that when they took Megan off, Katie, and she throws an absolute strop. It's like when I take my daughter's switch off her before bed, and so she's going to put it away. She does exactly the same, you know, children can. If that was another, like, maybe smile, I'd be played upon, you know, taking our technology off children when they're, you know, they're glued to it, aren't they? They're like a zombie to the screen type thing. And I think it felt like it was reflecting that with the moment when they take Gemma away from, Katie away from Megan, and she reacts the way she does, and, you know, slaps her auntie, doesn't she? She gets really upset and hits out her auntie. And I felt that was a good play on the way children can behave when you take off their favourite toys from them. So it's like a consequence of your own actions and letting them have so much, you know, screen time or whatever you wish to call it, whatever they're playing on. The consequence of those actions are them getting really, you know, dependent on it, like some sort of drug or something.
It's quite addictive, isn't it? It's the essentially using the TV as like a babysitter as like a good example of it, or literally saying, oh, I'm just gonna let them play on the computer for God knows how many hours, and it's like, well, it's the consequences for it.
Yeah, well, that's it. We get it. I mean, you know, we try and limit screen time for our, we've got 6 year old, she's got a Switch, Minecraft and Animal Crossing on it type thing, which is great, and she loves it. But, you know, you've got to give them that sort of lines and rules around it, but it doesn't mean they'll like it. She'll still sometimes, you know, get upset before bed when we're saying it's time to put it away. You know, it's time to go and brush teeth and go to bed. Yeah, so you're going to be, I think it's a little warning, isn't it? It's what happens if you don't have them rules in place and don't get them used to toeing a line in that sort of respect.
I loved it when they showed Megan just like in the room when all three of the, Gemma and her teammates all talking about like, how the hell are we going to deal with Megan?
Yeah, she's just listening. Yeah.
And she's just literally just laying there, like wrapped in bubble wrap and all sorts, and just laying there like a dead body, just sitting in the background, like, for God's sake, guys, like, I'm right here.
I can hear you. You haven't turned me off. Yeah. Very good.
Just little things like that made me laugh. And the neighbours when she's looking for a dog and like goes into the shed area and she's looking for a dog, and Megan just like slowly like stands up slowly and then like fires the
do you mean a chemical spray? It was like because that was the spray, as I said early on. She was, when you first meet.
That's one. The spray people use, a jet wash, that's the thing.
Yeah, but it wasn't just like water, was it? Because he says early on when she gets to, when you first meet that character, as Gemma's taunt, she says, will you stop spraying, keep your chemicals your side of the fence? So there's some sort of chemical compound, you know, that's in that jet wash or whatever it is, in a spray can, maybe sort of weed killer, I imagine, probably. And that's what she's doing, and that's what, and as soon as that scene happened early on, you know, straight away you're thinking that is going to be used to kill that particular character later on, you know. It was just so obvious. It's that foreshadowing that you see so often in horror films. That was, you know, I thought it was still well done foreshadowing, but it made me smile because I knew, right, she's getting it later and she's going to die by chemical, which she did, but in a much more stylish way. That was a good death.
Oh, I just thought it was really funny when she like literally like stood up and then fired it at the neighbour, because it just made me think like, surprise motherfucker, when she sort of sprayed it, and I was like, oh god, why?
She shot her hand with a nail gun first, didn't she, to hold her down in place, then pulls out the spray and just starts spraying her in the face of it.
Oh yeah.
It was very funny. It was very good. Say they did put the effort into, you know, each of the deaths were stylishly done and different. And then, you know, we always say this, it's hard to do deaths in slasher that are original and new because there've been so many of them over the years. But I thought it did really well with them. Really well.
Yeah. I'll admit the jet washers are really bloody powerful. Like, I think it was Top Gear when Matt LeBlanc was involved. Like, he used one of them and started cutting the outside of a car. All
right.
Because it was so high pressured, I was like, that could do a lot of damage to a human body.
Yes, it's not. I've never actually played around with one, so and don't plan to, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are just ridiculously powerful, and there's some where it's like it looks like you've got welts all over you from being sprayed with one of them, and it's like, yeah, I never want to be hit by one of them. So.
Mm-hmm. There was things I thought the actual therapist, she lived, she didn't die, did she? Did she die? I can't remember actually, no, I'm not getting...
No, she was
I thought she was going to die because of that point where she made Katie cry. And then Megan says, you made her cry. And she said, I didn't mean to. And she goes, oh, well, and now here we are. You're thinking, right, you're next. So yeah, that was actually a surprise that she didn't. That was one of the few characters that didn't die as a base, you know, as a result of upsetting Katie. That was a bit of a surprise.
Now you mentioned that, I remember looking at my friend when it got to like the end of the film. I just looked at him and went, I hope they've got that child therapist like phone number and speed dial.
Yeah, because she's gonna need it afterwards, right? Like, not only your parents died in a car crash, you've gone to live with your aunties trying to farm you out to kill a doll for doing the parenting. No, yeah, you've had your favourite toy taken off you, and you just have to rip it apart and smash it around with another robot.
Yeah, it's just, oh God, how do you even unpack that as a therapist?
Yeah, she'll be on a couch getting treatment for a long time.
There was the scene where she's where Megan is like chained up to the metal frame to like hold her in place when Gemma's friends are like hooking her up to the system. Mm-hmm. The guy, when he hits her in the face with that stick, I was like, why did he aim for the face? That's just gonna piss her off. like a leg maybe, an arm, sure, why the face? Straight away. But I can understand her, like Megan's reaction, because again, it was like almost like a dance move where she used the a cable tying one of her arms up and used it to like hang him off the frame with the cable.
Yeah,
and it was
quite,
kind of like
cool.
And the bit where she does like the gas as well. And I was thinking, right, if this was an 18, he would have died straight away, and the other employee would have died from the gas.
Yeah. So it was all those different deaths and actual, you know, scenes of violence were quite different from what, you know, it's not something that went, oh, that's exactly the same as every slasher I've seen. I thought they did well at that, trying to do things differently. I mean, Blum, you know, it's another Blumhouse film. You know, often we've talked about Blumhouse films in the past. Obviously one of the biggest studios putting out horror films. And yeah, I think the story was written by James Wan as well. Which is, you know, James Wan, he writes a good horror film. I mean, it might be, I can't remember the other person whose screenplay did this. Okay, someone Cooper, I can't remember the first name, which is, I never wrote it down. But yeah, so James Wan, though, he's obviously done the Conjuring series, and he's good. He's a good horror staple. So yeah, and obviously, again, we talked about this, didn't we, about how horror films are becoming event pieces. The market for this film was great. It cost $12 million to make, and already it's done over $125 million worldwide. You know, that's just incredible, isn't it? It's like horror is becoming a big theatre event again. And we said, you know, January, all the time to release it. There's no other films normally released in January. People are too busy worrying about Oscar nominations, etc. So people still want to go to cinema and enjoy themselves after Christmas, don't they? And Megan took advantage of that. $125 million off a £12 million budget, and obviously see after the sequel's already being announced.
Yeah, it's like within like 3 days of being released, they were like, oh God, it's made so much, they're already thinking about making a sequel.
Yeah, I think I'm probably sure in the lead up it was, you know, this is getting greenlit for a sequel. If it does well, they'll see in the final film, they'll have done audience reactions. They'll have done, you know, test audiences and stuff and seen how it went down and knew they had something good on their hands. So yeah, they probably already knew that, just wanted to make sure that the money did come in as much as they expected it to do. And it did. I did like, and talking about that with the sequel idea, I did really like the whole 80s, very 80s trope of the end of the film, and it's all done, and everyone's like, you know, Heidi and Gemma are walking out to the police, you know, retaining police cars, and seeing their colleagues all healthy and well again, and it's like the sort of feel-good moment. And then it just goes and does this whole thing about where it was, you know, every Nightmare on Elm Street film had it, where it did kill Freddy, and the very final scene would be how Freddy come back, so you knew there was going to be a sequel. And obviously with Megan, what it was the sort of the film's version of Alexa, wasn't it, the little assistant. But you'd already seen Megan playing around a bit early in the day, so you knew she'd taken over that little assistant. And its camera comes on and follows him at the door. And right away, you're thinking, oh, Megan's uploaded herself into that. That's going to be, you know, that's the route back to the sequel.
I knew there had to be something. As soon as they showed that, oh, yeah, that she could hack up the systems, I was like, oh, God, that fake Alexa's going to get it.
Yeah, so that's it. She'd obviously uploaded a version of herself into that fake Alexa, and I imagine that's where we'll start with the sequel. And yeah, as we spoke about the upcoming films, and we talked about this one, it was directed by Jared Johnston, who did also do another horror comedy, Housebound. So you know that humor stuff, it's humor from Housebound definitely came across in this as well, didn't it? It was
that definitely makes sense. Yeah. A lot of the humor makes sense now.
Yeah, he's obviously a funny guy, and you directed it well.
Yeah, there was just certain bits I can understand where the humour comes from now, like after when Megan gets attacked by the neighbour's dog, and then it causes her to start to, like, that was like the catalyst, that was the thing that caused her to start to suddenly change in personality in a way.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, like, I mean,
it was when she was like lying on the floor, and then she gets up and it's like, Katie is hurt. She needs a medical assistance. Megan's hair is just disheveled and all over the place. And I was like, God, yeah, I feel like that sometimes.
I did get annoyed when the sort of idea that the police turned up and he said, oh, we can't put the dog down because that dog would be getting shot in a second, right? If it attacked the child.
Oh, yeah, they're doing Old Yellow impression on him straight away.
Yeah, that's, I think another one of them bits where you have to suspend disbelief because, yeah, there's no way a dog basically attacks. Probably a 11 or 12 year old kid is getting to live, probably even younger than that, isn't she?
Yeah, that dog would not see the next morning.
Yeah, I thought the sort of some of the scenes of the police was quite amusing as well, like relief, like making them look a bit dumb and rubbish. When that guy, when she's getting interviewed with a detective, remember him saying to her, oh, I understand you know, you're around another deaf yesterday at the school open day, and she's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because the kid's ear was torn off and it was in the woods. I shouldn't be telling you that.
Like, oh, yeah, it's like, we might be cheaping that as a homicide too. It's like, and it just goes back to normal talk, and it's like, just makes it look really, it's just done for, like, relief, isn't it? It's done for, to laugh at it rather than take it seriously. Again, that's the whole thing about the film, not taking itself serious.
Yeah, like the scene where Megan is getting like slapped around in the woods after being thrown on the floor by the bully, and she like grabs his arm and then his ear and says, you need to learn some manners. And it's like, oh God.
And yeah, you know, that ear's coming off, so longer it gets stretched.
Oh yeah, that was like, it was uncomfortable seeing it stretched that far, because you think, oh, that's going to tear at some point, but I don't know when.
Yeah.
But the bit where she like gets up, like she's like unfolding herself in a way, when she stands up and she says, you should run now, and it's like, yep.
This is a bit where you run, that's what she says there. This is a bit where you run. And it was she chases them on all fours almost, didn't she? Which is great. It was just, yeah. It was a lot of the movement, I thought, of the doll as well was really well done. A sort of cross of robotics and sort of attempting to be human, I really enjoyed too.
Oh God, the teacher's reaction. I just remembered where the doors open and Katie and Megan are kind of like in the back seat, and the teacher comes up and she like, sees Katie and goes, oh, is that your little sister? And then Megan turns her head and she's like, oh, Jesus, yeah. When she sees Megan.
Yeah, you can imagine that actually to be almost a real, that would be the way people reacted, you know, it's completely new, very lifelike AI doll. You would shit yourself, I think, if you've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't say, oh, Jesus, I'd probably shout, oh, fuck my life and walk away, because I'd be like, this is horrible.
Yeah. Nope, I'm out of here. Need another job. Teaching's not for me.
Nope. So I can teach kids, but if you get a bot involved, I'm like, no. No, thank you. I can understand the fascination, but nah. Not just, no.
Yeah, I think it's been, and it's good to see, it's been, you know, it's been well reviewed from what I was reading. I think I looked on Rotten Tomatoes and it was like 3.6 or something, so Or that was at MDB, I can't remember now. But yeah, it's been mainly positively reviewed, so that's really good to see.
Yeah, I mean, Google says it's got a 87% like this film. IMDb is 6.6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes 94%, and Metacritic is 72%.
It's interesting, 94% of Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, I don't know who the other 6% who could really put that down as not being a good film. The audience score is always interested in Rotten Tomatoes. A lot of the time, even if you've got a really high rating from the critics, the audience score can be lower. And then vice versa, actually. Well, sometimes you can have a low critics rating and the audience really like it. I'm sure that'll probably be something to look at when it comes to like the Halloween's latest films. But the audience score is 79% as well, which is really high for Rotten Tomatoes. It'd get a 3.5 out of 5 for me. I really enjoyed it.
I liked where they went with the character design for Megan, because she does look quite prim and proper, but she does look like a child as well. And it's like, there's something unsettling to me about a child that looks too adult in a way. Like they look too grown up for their age group.
All right, yes. That's what I'm saying. She's dressed very stylishly and almost very, Mary Poppins like or something, you know, very smart. Little neck scarf and type thing. It was, yeah, it was a very 60s, 70s style outfit, wasn't it? And it just, yeah, I think it gave the visual aspect of Megan, the actual doll itself, I thought was great.
Megan's actually played by about 3 different girls.
Oh, really?
One of them I know is a dancer. Like she does, like, I think, ballet in a couple of like Hollywood films. I think one of them may have been either a gymnast or a contortionist, and like the other one was like a general person to sort of like walk around with to get the movement of a child.
Okay, and obviously you've got the voice acting as well. So yeah, actually, I've just gone to the Wikipedia page and it's got Amy Donald as Megan and Jenna Davis as Megan's voice. So obviously, you must have had some motion capture people as well. Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we did say when we spoke about upcoming films that the proof would be the pudding in January, because, you know, there was a couple of films that we mentioned on that podcast which were coming up, and whether January gets off to a good start or not would be relying on how they went. And you know, from my perspective, I watched both Megan, which, you know, is way better than I thought it would be. I know it feels almost better than it has any right to be as a PG-13. That's normally a red flag for a horror fan, proper horror film fan, or, you know, hardcore horror film fan, I should say. But, it, you know, it did great. So that's a good start. And I also watched Christian Bale, Edgar Allan Poe, Pale, I forgot what it's called now, on Netflix.
Pale Blue Eye.
And then that got mixed reviews, but I enjoyed it. It could have been a little bit shorter, but I still really enjoyed it. So, you know, a decent start for film this year.
That with a lot of films these days, and the last like year or so, like horror films in particular, have gone from like a solid 90 to 100 minutes to like 200 minutes.
Yeah, there's been that
or longer, and it's like, oh my god.
Yes, yeah, so that's a fair point. There has been, yes, of the when you get to the far end of the spectrum, when you've got Terrifier 2 running at 2 hours 20 minutes. So yeah, there's most horror films do not need to be that long, right? Absolutely agreed. Maybe Hereditary and Midsommar, the only two, which again, this is very opinion splitting, definitely splits MK Horror down the middle. But, you know, they're a bit more of a storyline to them, so they do have a bit longer to them over 2 hours, which works for me, not for everyone though. A story like this, so Megan, it's going to be 90 minutes, you know, 100 minutes tops. You can't really stretch it out, and I think it landed really well with the time and didn't feel like it dragged at any point. In fact, at one point, I sort of looked at my phone and realised we'd just done, you know, just looking at the time, how long we'd gone. And we'd gone over an hour and 20 minutes, and I didn't realise it had gone that far because it was really fast-paced, and it went. There was no sort of, didn't feel like there was any filler time in it at all.
It was nice. It was to the point. It wasn't one of those films that, like you said, it didn't drag anything out. There wasn't any like filler moments.
Yeah, you weren't sitting there going, come on, get going. You know, or, you know, you're dragging the sort of backstory too much or something. See, that opening scene, you find the backstory of why she's orphaned and sent to her auntie, right? Katie's got to go and live with Auntie Gemma. It's done in like 2 minutes, isn't it? It's really, really quick. It's also shadowed later on.
I like the fact that it was just so, like the fact that the beginning bit where you see the backstory, like you see it happen straight away, and then you sort of like, you get to the main thing. Like it's not something that's dragged around later on in the story as like a bit of an annoying plot point, or to say you should feel sorry for this character now because of she just found out about this. It's literally like, this is the main thing. This is the event that has caused like these two, like the Katie and Gemma, to end up living together and to cause, in a way, to let you to inspire Megan to be created.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's you know, a really positive review from both of us. I think both. You know, I was interested to see what you thought. I'm not. I know Paul from MK Horror has seen it. I don't know if Chris has yet. And I've not spoken to Paul because, you know, we both only just recently watched it. But I'll be interested to get his feedback on it. But I've not heard anything from anybody else that's been negative yet. So well done to Blumhouse for this one.
Yes, well done. I was a little bit sceptical because as soon as I saw that James Wan was involved, I was like, I don't know how I feel about it, but I'll give it a go. So I thought, like, I don't think he's going to do the Conjuring trick where it's just going to put a bunch of jump scares in it that aren't needed.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, especially the PG-13, I think, yeah, you're on the risk of doing things like that. I don't know how much James Wan. I know the storyline is sort of part of his creation with the screenwriter, Alecca Cooper, but I don't know. I think it was only screenwritten by Cooper, not actually by James Wan, so he's probably got, you know, he's probably had creative input, but not actually written the screenplay himself.
That's good. But yeah, I definitely recommend this film to anyone that wants to watch
Absolutely.
It. After we spoiled pretty much everything.
Yeah, so yeah. Maybe we should have said that at the beginning, because there's going to be spoilers in this film. Let's forward this and watch the film first if you haven't seen it already. Maybe you should put that when you send it out. Put it live. Say, yeah.
Oh well, I'm literally gonna have that in like the main section and say there's spoilers in this. Yeah. Don't watch the film first.
This is a spoilerific review of Megan. So yeah, I would give it 3.5 out of 5. I was hoping at best for 3 out of 5. So give it an extra half point just because of the fun I had with it. I mean, it might retrospectively, when I think about it, probably go back down to being a 3 out of 5. But, you know, I came out feeling happy about it and smiling. So that's all you can ask for a film like that when, yeah, I was happy.
I think I'll have to give it a 4 out of 5, maybe a little bit higher, because it's... Joe actually asked me if, like, would I watch it again? And I said, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'd definitely watch it again.
Like, I would happily buy it on DVD and look at the special features. You can watch it on your own as a couple, on a date night, or... and a group of friends at a house party. Like, it's very versatile in the type of film that it is, in terms of like what kind of audience.
Yeah, I really want to watch this with Helen as well. I think this is like, I think we've mentioned this in podcast before. She'll watch horror still. But she's not as into it as she used to be. But this is definitely one I think she'll enjoy because it is funny. You know, she'll really enjoy the sort of horror comedy aspect of the horror genre. So I think she'll like this a lot.
Yeah, a couple of friends at work asked about it. You know, I said to him, like, I recommend you watch this one. I know you're not massive fans of horror, but I think you'd like the humour in it. You'd like the subject matter. It's not got any of the things in it that would cause any upset for either of you. So I recommend watching it, and yeah, they might actually go see it.
Oh, great, great. And you want, it's great to see horror doing well, as we say, at the box office. The more films are... know, gross over $100 million for only a $12 million input means we'll get more of them, because Hollywood follows the money. All the big studios will follow the money, and if horror's getting the money, we'll get more of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see like a film with like an actual plot and have like, not, I wouldn't say like there's known actors in this film, but I wouldn't cast them as like,
yeah, they're not
triple A level sort of thing. Like, they're not like Brad Pitt or anyone like that. They're sort of like slightly lesser known, but they're still known in the circuit. Course, yeah. And it's nice to see them do well.
It was good to see Alison Williams come back. She was great, absolutely fantastic in Get Out, and she was great in this as well. She really played, I mean, you know, part of me was really disliking her character at first. I mean, when she was just, you know, when you realise she's built this robot to take over the duties that she's supposed to now have, even because it's been sort of thrust upon her due to the tragic events of her sister and brother-in-law's death. You know, when you realise she's just creating this doll to to farm off the kid. Like, he's not a very nice character. You know then at the same time when you're watching that, you know it's going to come back and it's going to be all lovey-dovey at the end and everything's going to be all sweet with the girl and her auntie. Had to be. And it, you know, it does play out like that. But yeah, I thought she played the role really well.
Yeah, she plays sympathetic really well, like a person that's career driven but realizes I've screwed up and I need to fix what I've done. Like actually, the fact that she has that realization of I can't make my niece happy all the time, so the best I can do is like let her feel the emotions that she's kind of hiding away from everyone. And it was nice to see her actually going, you know what, you're meant to feel sad. Like, your parents are dead. Exactly. Like, you're meant to feel sad. You're meant to feel lonely. Fine. You're meant to go through all those things. Like, those are natural emotions. And just having, like, this bot essentially making you happy all the time and looking after you, it's like a band-aid that is just going to fester. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think I've got any more points.
I think we've summed up. There's, you know, just gone through the main part of the film. Talked about the bits we liked and how, you know, well it ended as well. So, yeah. So, highly recommended. A lot of fun. Don't think you're going to see an elevated horror, as the horror term says. You're just going to see a fun, enjoyable comic flick.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the sequel. I definitely want to watch this film again at some point.
Yeah, I'll definitely watch it again myself.
So, where can our listeners find you?
So, as always, you can sign up for our newsletter, mkhorror.com. We will send out our next screenings via newsletter. We've had, after our last conversation we had today, confirmed that on March the 4th, at MK Gallery, we'll be showing a director's cut of The Exorcist as well. So it'll be really exciting and looking forward to that. It'll be the first time I've seen it on the big screen. And it's 50th year, so that's going to be something to look forward to. We also probably, before this podcast drops, we've got Child's Play at the Crawford this Saturday as well, 2 p.m. So it'll be a second Killer Doll film in a week, but with very, very different aesthetics to each other. On Facebook, we are mkhorror. We are on Instagram as MK Horror Club, and I think we're just MK Horror on Twitter. Yeah, please follow up and follow us and for our newsletter.
Lovely job, Lee. You can find Caffeinated Monsters podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and the Slasher app, or most listening platforms. We also have merch, which is on our Linktree and our socials. What else is there? You can also enjoy a Eco Roast coffee with 10% off if you use the coupon code CM. And yeah, you can join our Patreon for £3 a month, which means that you would have access to watch parties from Amazon Prime and maybe Netflix once in a while. You get updates and you get to join in get to suggest films and subjects as well. It's all good and good fun. You get to join in for joining with the podcast. Plus, you get a shout out.
Well, thank you very much again, Faith. It's been an interesting game, as always.
Yes, and hopefully next time my internet won't drop out.
I think you'll edit that out, though, so it won't be me just sat here twiddling my thumbs for 40 minutes on a podcast.
So if it drops again next time, I'll just yeet the router out the window. Bloody thing.